This is the Space Geeks Podcast.
The clock has started.
3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
We are ready for the event.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Leone with Space News in Washington. This is the Space Geeks Podcast, and hang on a second. I'm actually still watching the end of GoldenEye here on YouTube. You remember GoldenEye? That's the James Bond movie that came out in 1995 with Pierce Brosnan as Bond. I think GoldenEye's probably my favorite Bond movie, and Brosnan's probably my favorite Bond. But anyway, I'm going somewhere with this. So, if you haven't seen the movie, the final climactic fight between James Bond and his arch-nemesis 006, Alec Trevelyan, takes place on this catwalk suspended high above a giant concrete crater. Well, that's a real place. That's the Arecibo Observatory in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. It's a huge radio telescope. And apparently, the filmmakers got at least one thing about the observatory wrong.
If you've seen GoldenEye, there's a scene where Bond and 006 are going up to the telescope cradle to have their fight. And you see Bond go running up the catwalk, and you see 006 get in the cable car and pull the emergency release, and the cable car takes off. And it's really not like that.
That's this week's guest, Alessandra Springman, a planetary astronomer who has ridden the cable car at Arecibo enough times to know what it's really like. Slow. It's really, really slow. The cable car is also open air, and the dome of the telescope is pretty high off the ground. High enough that it's going to make people who aren't used to riding in rickety cable cars a little uncomfortable.
It's about 500 feet up in the air. I forget what that is in meters.
That's just over 150 meters, actually, which is something that I have to remind you about because of Space News style conventions. Like most of the world, we use the metric system. And hey, one more style convention just for this episode. Most people call Alessandra Sondi, including her. So that's what we'll do. Now, Sondi's got years of practical astronomy experience already, and she'll tell you all about them, but let's get something straight at the outset here. Sondi's still very much a planetary scientist in training. She won't have the opportunity over the next few years to do something like, become the principal investigator of the first ever mission to fly by Pluto close up and take its picture. No, Sondi's going to spend the next 3 or 4 years working on her doctorate at the University of Arizona's Lunar and Planetary Laboratory in Tucson. That, by the way, is where Sondi was when I interviewed her a little while back. We did the interview over Skype, so if anything sounds a little bit funny, the audio drops, or Sondi peaks a little bit, beg your indulgence and just hang in there, okay? So Sondi, like any planetary scientist, has a particular type of planetary body that she spends most of her time studying. In Sondi's case, it's asteroids. Alright, now, you may look at an asteroid and see just sort of a lumpy gray potato and wonder, what with all the many amazing technicolor planets in our solar system, why would anybody be interested in studying asteroids?
So if you can study an asteroid that has remained pristine in the last 4.6 billion years, that's kind of a big deal. It would be like it's studying what we all are made of. It's studying the origin of Earth, the terrestrial planets. It's our baby photos. It's where we came from. It's our heritage.
So this is the sort of metaphor that could get a guy a big hashtag actually. But think of asteroids as sort of being to the Earth what fossils are to the dinosaurs. Yeah, we don't know exactly what a dinosaur was like, but if you look at this fossil thing, you can make some really good guesses and do some legitimate science. And so, big reveal here, the mission Sondi's working on at the University of Arizona is a NASA asteroid mission.
I'm working for the OSIRIS-REx mission, which is an asteroid sample return mission launching in about 423 days.
That's in September 2016, if you're like me and didn't want to do the math.
It's going to a near-Earth asteroid called Bennu, which has some risk in several hundred years of hitting the Earth. And we think that this asteroid has remained unchanged since the formation of the solar system. So it'll get to the asteroid in 2018. And so if I can be a responsible, proactive grad student and graduate before it gets to the asteroid, that will be good, because things will go from chaos to sheer and utter chaos in 2018 when we get there.
Listening to Sondi, you really get the idea, not just from what she says, but from how she says it, that she's really enamored with asteroids. Sondhi's development as an asteroid specialist started during her undergraduate days at Wellesley College nearby Boston, Massachusetts. She graduated from Wellesley in 2007 with a Bachelor of Arts in Astronomy that she might never have gotten if she hadn't taken a stroll one night early on in her freshman year.
I was always interested in airplanes and aerospace, but never really seriously. I never realized that I could be an engineer or I could do this. It never really felt like something I could do. And I went to college, and I was wandering around the campus during orientation by myself, just wandering around, going back to my dorm from somewhere else. And I walked by the observatory on campus, and I saw a lab instructor setting out telescopes. And he said, "You should take Astronomy 110." And I said, "Okay."
In a little bit of prophecy, Sondhi's first astronomy class was actually taught by a guy called Richard French, the head of the radio science team on NASA's Cassini-Saturn orbiter, which reached Saturn in 2004, around the time that Sondhi was at college. Astronomy 110 didn't seal the deal, though. That happened a year later.
In my sophomore year, I signed up for an observing class. There was a 24-inch research-grade telescope. There's actually a twin of it on Mauna Kea. And I had this professor who, you know, after you've been studying something for a while, sometimes you kind of look like it. He's sort of tall and lanky, kind of resembled a telescope. And so I was in this observing class with him, and he studied asteroids for a living. And so a lot of us wound up studying asteroids for him. We would observe asteroids, and he would reduce the data. And I remember him explaining to me one night how his research works. And this was some night in January. I was a sophomore. It was the sort of the intersection between classes. I remember stumbling back to my dorm that night. It was very cold, but sort of looking up at the sky and saying, "Oh, this makes sense. You know, you can figure these things out. And it's beautiful that you can use all these tools that are accessible to me right now as a sophomore in college to figure this out." And from then on, I was hooked.
So that's how it started. And we know where it's ended up, right? The University of Arizona, the doctoral program, the OSIRIS-REx sample return mission. But what happened between that epiphany at Wellesley and that doctoral program in Tucson? Well, Sondhi went to MIT, where she got a master's in Earth and Planetary Science. She graduated from that program in 2011, and that's where her story starts to get more interesting. And not the sort of interesting that you read about in a glossy NASA press release about the latest planetary science rover to boldly go where no robot has gone before.
After I finished my master's at MIT, I didn't really know what to do with myself. I wasn't really sure. I was pretty sure at that point that I wanted to leave science, but I wanted to try some other things. I wanted to try more engineering. And I went moping into the MIT International Science and Technology Initiatives office. I had just been broken up with. I had no job prospects because I had this master's in planetary science. And so I was applying for jobs outside of planetary science, because there are very few jobs in planetary science. And most people said, "Well, you've got this master's in planetary science. Why would you want to do anything else? Like, we're not going to hire you because we know you're just going to leave as soon as you can find a job in your field."
So yeah, not everybody gets to be Mr. Wizard or Bill Nye or NASA's chief scientist or even one of NASA's least scientists. In Sondhi's particular case, there was kind of a gnarly trifecta going on. She couldn't find any work in her field, and potential employers outside of her field viewed her as a flight risk. And oh, by the way, she had grown apart from her friends back home.
I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and a lot of my friends are working in tech, and I came back and I really felt like I was really disconnected from them, that there was, that there's just sort of a, we're doing technology, we're better than people, we're different than people, we don't have to give back. We're having a great time and we don't really consider the implications or ramifications of what we do. And I felt really disconnected from that.
So, tangled up in this web of personal and professional complications, Sondhi did what a lot of people in similar circumstances have done. She hit the road. But, to be clear, as part of an international exchange program sponsored by MIT. Her first stop was Japan, where she spent some time working with the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA. It's that country's analog to NASA. It was during her time with JAXA that Sondhi realized the little spark that was kindled while she was wandering around Wellesley all those years ago hadn't exactly gone out.
So I wound up working in an aerospace research lab at JAXA one summer, working studying super cooled fluids and how you would study how you would do wind tunnel experiments. And it was great fun. And somewhere in there, I decided I really wanted to go back to doing astronomy research. But it was like, all right, how is this going to work?
Not smoothly and not in a few neat steps.
So I came back to the U.S. and was working part-time as a research assistant for astronomer in the Bay Area and part-time at a friend's startup and said, I need out. Neither of these things are going particularly well. I do not like living in San Francisco. I need out.
So Sandy got out, again taking advantage of an MIT program, this time one that sent her to Ghana in West Africa.
It was funded by Google. It was a good program, learned a lot, hopefully imparted some skills that I have to students there who wouldn't necessarily have acquired them.
And so after that experience, once her mind and other things had cleared, Sandy realized once again,
I want a job in astronomy. I want a job in astronomy, not in the continental U.S. How do I make this work? So I applied for a job at Gemini South in Chile, and I applied for a job at Arecibo Observatory. And I'd been talking to Mike Nolan at Arecibo Observatory about the working for him doing radar, studying near-Earth asteroids. And he said, the money's coming. I said, okay, I've heard that one before. And I reached out to him after I'd gotten back from West Africa, and he said, the money's come, would you mind applying for this job? And I applied for the job, and I showed up at Arecibo Observatory in October of 2012, and I fell in love immediately with Arecibo. I'd been working on asteroid stuff for a while. I knew asteroids were pretty much what I wanted to do. But coming to Arecibo was just, so many things came together. A lot of different asteroid work I'd done observing, and then being able to work in the tropics, not being in the continental U.S., working on a really fabulous team, was phenomenal.
And these phenomena lasted for 2 years. That's about how long Sandy spent at Puerto Rico at Arecibo before she headed up to the University of Arizona in Tucson. And even though it's trite to say this, that's really more of a beginning than an end, even though we are getting to the end of the episode now. Sandy, who's in the middle of her doctoral work now, has started to get some ideas about how to steer this astronomy ship now that she's finally managed to get on board.
I've still got 3-4 years in my PhD program, and I think there's a lot to learn in school and postdocs, especially on how to be a scientist, how to come up with questions on your own, how to answer them on your own. But another thing that I sort of watched at Arecibo was that a good manager can really make all the difference in not only how he or she handles their staff, but also in the health of a program like Arecibo. And so I'd like to learn a lot more about scientific and engineering management, which is something I'm sort of watching happen on OSIRIS-REx, because I think there's a huge need to have managers in science and engineering who understand not only how the science and engineering works, but how to set their people up for success.
So there's a quick look at the path that one astronomer wandered to parlay a brush with astronomy as a liberal art into a career in science, she hopes. You know, after Sandy's negotiated a few more bends in that road, I think I'll check back with her. Pretty sure there's still going to be a story there. The Space Geeks podcast is recorded and produced in Apple's GarageBand with an Apogee USB mic that I just love. Some sounds were provided by NASA via the agency's SoundCloud account. Other sounds were provided by the Internet Archive at archive.org. Still other sounds were provided by my guitar and a quaint old tool called reporting. For Space News in Washington, I'm Dan Leone.
It was a great experience, except for getting gastroenteritis. But hey, it comes with the territory.